Hey, everybody, it's Sasha Ann Simons. Just like so many of you, at 1A, we're doing everything we can to help slow the spread of the coronavirus. That means moving as much of our production as we can to our homes. So if you notice the show sounding a little different than what you might be used to, that's why. And we always want to hear your feedback on these episodes. Email 1A at WAMU.org with your comments, questions, and stories. Thanks, and enjoy the show. This is 1A from WAMU in Washington. President Trump's daily press briefings have offered us insight into what's on the mind of the man in charge of leading America through the coronavirus pandemic. Over the past month, he's mentioned the drug hydroxychloroquine repeatedly. Here he is speaking early last week.
And the other thing that we've bought a tremendous amount of is the hydroxychloroquine, which I think... As you know, it's a great malaria drug. It's worked unbelievably. It's a powerful drug on malaria. And there are signs that it works on this, some very strong signs.
Very strong signs, says President Trump. But that same day, hours earlier on CBS's Face the Nation, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Trump's top medical expert on infectious diseases, said something different.
The data are really just at best suggestive. There have been cases that show there may be an effect, and there are others to show there's no effect.
When a reporter for CNN tried to ask Dr. Fauci about the medical evidence for hydroxychloroquine, as President Trump stood by his side at the press conference, the president interjected.
What do you think about this, and what is the medical evidence?
That question?
Maybe 15, the doctor.
15 times. Okay. You don't have to ask
He's your medical expert, correct?
He's answered that question 15 times.
Well, it's clear. You have questions about hydroxychloroquine, too. Joining to help us get the answers is Dr. Wesley Self. He's an emergency physician at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee, where he's treating COVID-19 patients. Welcome to 1A, Dr. Self.
It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Also with us from her home in Washington, D.C. is Sarah Overmall. She's a healthcare reporter for Politico. Hi, Sarah. Great to have you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sarah, I'll start with you. President Trump has mentioned hydroxychloroquine repeatedly at his press conferences over the past month, as we mentioned. Can you just take us back to when that all started? How did it become one of his main talking points?
Right. So the interest in hydroxychloroquine really started to pick up in March when a few people online, some Silicon Valley types, Bitcoin investors, put a paper out. It was a few days after early data out of France suggested that there could be some benefit from this medicine, although some of that data has since been questioned and the methods that were used there have been questioned. But it really started to pick up in internet life in early March. Then these people started appearing on Fox News. And then within days, the president was touting it on the press briefing stage. What we've learned from sources inside the administration is that the conversations had started days before that with his health officials, with other people on his coronavirus task force about trying to strike a balance here on what we know about this drug and what we can go out there and champion and say, start trying this.
Mm. Dr. Self, you're leading a National Institute of Health trial that started last week to test the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine in treating patients who are critically ill with COVID-19. Tell us the details of that study. How will it work?
Sure. Happy to do that. We are taking hydroxychloroquine seriously. I agree with the comments that there are some suggestions that this drug may have an effect in the coronavirus or COVID-19. But there are still questions about whether this drug will work to help patients clear the coronavirus infection and clinically improve. So we've seen in laboratory studies that hydroxychloroquine has some action that we think may help patients with coronavirus. But there's been a lot of drugs over the years who've had promise in early studies that when we carefully study it in patients tend not to have as much effectiveness as we thought they may from laboratory studies. So I would say we're in the phase now across the world, really, where we're really trying to understand what these promising medications will do when we start treating patients. Hydroxychloroquine is one of these drugs. And as you mentioned, we are starting a clinical trial across the United States to really generate the data that we need to truly understand what hydroxychloroquine is doing in the coronavirus pandemic. So specifically, patients who are hospitalized with coronavirus, we're assessing them when they come in the hospital. And if they meet certain criteria, we're enrolling them in a clinical trial in which about half the patients get hydroxychloroquine and half get a blinded placebo pill. Mm-hmm. So a pill that looks like hydroxychloroquine but actually has none of the active medicine in it. And through this study and similars like it that are popping up across the world, we think we're going to really be able to understand precisely what this medication is doing with our patients who have coronavirus.
Dr. Wesley Self is a professor of emergency medicine at Vanderbilt University. And we also have Sarah Overmall. She's a healthcare reporter at Politico. Sarah, you heard Dr. Self just a moment ago. What else, you know, from your reporting, does the science that we have now tell us about how well hydroxychloroquine works in treating people with COVID-19?
Well, Dr. Self really got at the crux of what's going on right now. It's really hard from outside of a clinical trial to develop clear answers. And so what he and the doctors at Vanderbilt University Medical Center are trying to do is get those answers, not just on whether it works, but whether there are risks or when it's best to use it, if it's early on in the infection, if it's when it's severe, if it could be preventive. We don't have those answers right now. And when there is anecdotal evidence, there's a tendency towards, you know, picking the successful stories. So that's the major worry right now with the way that it's being prescribed outside of trials in the U.S. because the president has been championing it on the press briefing stage and because the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, authorized emergency use at the end of last month, which means that millions of pills were donated to the national stockpile and that theoretically doctors can be prescribing this without feeding into national registries that would get at these questions that Dr. Self and others are trying to answer. And so there are multiple trials going on in the U.S. There's one in New York happening right now in the epicenter of the virus. There's also one that started this week in South Dakota. All of these are still in early stages. Outside of the U.S., there's been some mixed data out of China, which, of course, was the original epicenter and where it's winding down now. There's some data suggesting that the pills can hasten recovery in people with mild symptoms, but there's also some data suggesting there isn't any benefit. And then there was a French study by Dr. Didier Raoult that has garnered a lot of attention that did suggest a benefit from hydroxychloroquine. But when you look at the data, some researchers have called it into question because, as Dr. Self just described his trial, you randomize people into one group that gets the treatment and one group that does not. Mm-hmm. Dr. Raoult did not do that. And so in a way, you could be setting yourself up for success, whether intentionally or not, by choosing the patients who get this treatment versus other ones.
Lots of talk about this drug. Dr. Self, tell us what exactly is hydroxychloroquine in layman's terms, please. Tell us what does the medicine do and how long has it been around?
Hydroxychloroquine has been around for a long time, decades, and has a lot of different actions in the body. It was originally used for malaria, so to treat an infection with malaria, which is a parasite. Mm-hmm. And it was used that way for quite a while. And then scientists and doctors realized that hydroxychloroquine also has an effect on the immune system, so dampening down inflammation or swelling throughout the body. And that was a useful property in things like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, so autoimmune diseases in which there's really an uncontrolled swelling or inflammation in the body. Hydroxychloroquine works to decrease that swelling. So there's really two properties of this drug called hydroxychloroquine. One, it helps prevent some pathogens, so some germs, from getting inside the body's cells. So that's how it works with malaria, and that's how it also might work with coronavirus. And then it has these other properties that work more on the host or the patient itself that decreases the amount of swelling or what we call uncontrolled or systemic inflammation. And there's excitement that hydroxychloroquine may be useful in the coronavirus disease through this pathway as well. Mm-hmm. The lung starts to swell. So fluid builds up in the lungs in a lot of patients with coronavirus. And that's the way that a lot of people get very sick. So that's kind of a general sense of what hydroxychloroquine is and how it's been used over the decades.
Now, demand for hydroxychloroquine has skyrocketed. So what does this mean for the patients who were already taking it? We're speaking with Dr. Wesley Self and reporter Sarah Overmall. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom makes it easy for Americans to set up their estate plans without leaving their homes. Don't know the difference between a last will or living trust? What about an advance healthcare directive? LegalZoom can help. They're not a law firm, but you can get started quickly online and also get advice through their network of independent attorneys. Learn more about estate plans and how you can speak to an attorney for advice at LegalZoom.com.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
COVID-19 has upended our lives, shaken us from all sense of security.
When it comes to pandemics, we just are in this cycle of panic and complacency. We'll see if this one puts an end to that.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi. How can we protect ourselves against future global outbreaks? That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen now.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about the drug hydroxychloroquine, which President Trump touts as a potential treatment for patients sick with COVID-19. But doctors say there's not enough evidence that it works. It does work, however, for people who suffer from lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and other illnesses. Here's a message one of you left us.
Hi, my name is Carol. I'm a pharmacist in Florida. My issue is with the hydroxychloroquine being touted by the president. Unfortunately, this has created a terrible shortage, and my patients with lupus and RA are now out of medication and don't know when they'll be able to get their medication again.
We heard from a couple of you who have run into that problem.
This is Judy Rao, and I have been taking that medication for 25 years for rheumatoid arthritis. I received a letter from my pharmacy last week in the mail saying that I will no longer be able to get this medicine due to high demand. So I'm quite unhappy because for me, the medicine has been very effective. And I tried to go off at one time, and within 3 weeks, I had a huge flare that took me 3 months to recover from.
Hi, my name is Maggie, and I'm calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. I get my medications from a mail order pharmacy, which has had it on back order, and they are unable to tell me when they're going to have more in stock to ship to me. In the meantime, I have cut back to 1/3 my dose, and I'm definitely having side effects from the reduced dosage.
Thanks, Carol and Judy, for sharing your stories with us. We received a call from 1A listener Maggie, and we were so moved by her story that we called her back. We invited her to join us today on air. Maggie is a nurse in Wilmington, North Carolina, where she listens to WHQR. She asked us not to use her last name. Maggie, welcome to 1A.
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Can you start, Maggie, by just telling us when you started taking hydroxychloroquine and for what?
Okay, so I started taking it in 2016, which is when I was finally diagnosed with a rare autoimmune disease, which has a long name. It's mixed connective tissue disease.
Okay.
I had been diagnosed with a paralyzed stomach 10 years prior, and it took 10 years and searching for a really good doctor to get a diagnosis that actually made sense of my symptoms. And so in 2016, I saw this great rheumatologist, and she said, I think I know what you've got. It's very rare. It's going to take a long time to get the test back. And when it came back positive for mixed connective tissue disease, she started me on the hydroxychloroquine Plaquenil, which was effective. It didn't completely resolve all my symptoms, but it definitely helped.
Mm-hmm. You said you were unable to get your medicine refilled at the start of the month. So what happened next?
Well, I started getting very nervous the minute I started hearing.
I can imagine.
This is the answer. This is going to answer all of the COVID questions. And I have most of my regular medications on 90-day mail order, and I was due for refill in the beginning of April, was unable to order it online, so called, and of course had to wait at least an hour to talk to a person, and I was told that it was on back order and that they had no idea when there was going to be any more. There was some sort of that it was implied that the stock that they had been basically taken.
Okay. So this pandemic then, you know, overall, what has it meant for your access to the medical care that you need more generally?
I have not been able to do some of the treatments that would be sort of considered elective. So there are steroid injections that I'm not getting. There are other kinds of treatments and medications that require going to doctor's offices that I am suspending for the time being. And so it's hard to know exactly, is my reduced dose of Plaquenil really causing all of these problems, these worsening of my symptoms? But I don't think it could possibly be helping to not be on the medication that has been effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck. Maggie is a nurse who lives in Wilmington, North Carolina. Maggie, thanks so much for sharing your story with us, and thank you for all that you're doing to help others.
And thank you for covering this too, Sasha.
My pleasure. Now back to my guests, Dr. Wesley Self, an emergency physician at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and Sarah Overmull, a healthcare reporter at Politico. You both just heard Maggie's story. Sarah, tell us, how common is that? Is this widespread?
Yes, unfortunately, Maggie's story is really familiar right now. People are dealing with these shortages nationwide. Last week, I spoke to David Karp, the president-elect of the American College of Rheumatology, the doctors who generally treat patients like Maggie who have arthritis and lupus. And he said that very quickly supplies in local pharmacies around the country went down to zero, and that he hasn't spoken to a single doctor who hasn't had a patient come to him and say, I can't find my medication right now. Hydroxychloroquine prescriptions have shot up between 4,000 and 7,000% across the country, depending on where people are right now.
Yeah.
And so that's very quickly become a concern. There is the national stockpile, the millions of pills that were donated to the national stockpile are meant to stem some of these concerns, because those pills ideally would go towards these people that want to use it for coronavirus rather than people like Maggie who have been using it for years for other reasons. Mm-hmm. But it's unclear how and when those pills are going to be doled out, how they're going to be tracked. And then in the meantime, states are trying to help out patients like Maggie by putting in place prescription caps, so saying someone can only get a certain number of days of the pills, or by urging doctors to only prescribe these pills for approved uses like lupus and arthritis, not COVID-19.
Mm. Let's get to some listener questions. Day emails, if hydroxychloroquine is helpful, then do any lupus or rheumatoid arthritis patients only get mild cases or no COVID at all? Dr. Self?
Yes, really important question. We don't know for sure. One would think that if you're already on this medicine, it would somehow be protective of, from you getting the disease. There's some early reports, and they're just mixed. Like so many things in this pandemic, we just don't know. It's an important question that we're trying to gather as much data on as we can.
Mm-hmm. Another one here from NCD. This one was a tweet. It says, are the patients who are getting this drug for COVID-19 signing consent forms for experimental treatment? Even compassionate use requires informed consent. Are FDA rules being violated? What do you say to that?
Important question again. So the clinical trials that we are running, patients do sign informed consent. So we have a long discussion at the bedside with the patient and any of the other relevant decision makers, such as family members, about what we know about hydroxychloroquine. There are potential benefits, there are potential risks, and then we go through those carefully and talk about exactly what will happen in the study. And then only patients that have informed consent, so explicitly say they want to be in the study, mm-hmm. are in the studies.
Okay.
Now, outside of clinical trials, it is possible that patients are being prescribed hydroxychloroquine without those explicit conversations.
Lots of engagement happening here, so I want to make sure we get as many of your questions in as possible. Here's an email from Amy. She says, I'm a lupus patient and take hydroxychloroquine. I had a mild case of COVID-19, and I credit the drug for helping protect me. My rheumatologist told me that the drug helps prevent the cytokine storm, which is when the virus seems to move into the lungs. I'm grateful to have avoided that, and my heart goes out to the patients, coronavirus, lupus, and arthritis, who can't get the drug. What's your response, Dr. Self?
Yes, so cytokine storm is what we started to describe earlier, where the body itself has an overreaction to the virus, in a sense, and this swelling or inflammation starts to take over the lung. One of the ways that hydroxychloroquine might work is to prevent that cytokine storm or the overreaction of the immune system.
Okay.
There are reports of this potentially working in patients, as was described here, but we just don't know if the patient didn't have hydroxychloroquine, if she would have had the same course or not. So we need enough information to understand the course of the disease, both with and without the drug.
Amy emails us, please ask your guests to talk about all the possible side effects of hydroxychloroquine, specifically cardiac arrhythmias. Very quickly, doctor, can you fill us in on the side effects before we take a break?
Yes. So we've been talking a lot about how the drug may be helpful in coronavirus, but almost all drugs have side effects and potential risks. So it's really important to think about those as well. The most common side effects are mild, and you know, people have been taking this drug for decades, so we understand them pretty well. Those are nausea, diarrhea, some vomiting, some rash. There are more serious side effects, though, as well. We think they're rare, but we don't know if they're going to be more common in people who are very sick with coronavirus, mm-hmm. because the virus actually makes the heart potentially more vulnerable to the side effects of the drug.
So, you know what, why don't we get into that? Because it sounds like it's going to get more complicated, those longer term side effects. So hold that thought, Dr. Self. We'll have more from our guests and from you in a moment.
There's no getting around it. The coronavirus pandemic has upended everything. And daily decisions made by the White House and Congress will radically impact the human and economic toll. To keep up with the latest, join us on the NPR Politics podcast. We'll cut through the noise and let you know what decisions are being made and how they affect you.
All right, we are talking about hydroxychloroquine, a drug that the president has brought up repeatedly at press conferences as a potential life-saving treatment for the coronavirus. Here he is speaking last week.
And it may work and it may not work. But if it doesn't work, it's nothing lost by doing it, nothing. Because we know long-term what I want to save lives.
My guests are Dr. Wesley Self, an emergency physician at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee, and Sarah Overmall, a healthcare reporter at Politico. Dr. Self, I want to give you a chance to pick up where we left off. You were talking about side effects, particularly long term.
Yes, I'm sorry to be long-winded with that answer, but I think it's important. We started to talk about the effects that hydroxychloroquine may have on the heart. And patients that are sick with coronavirus may have some susceptibility to heart problems because the virus is causing what's called a cardiomyopathy. So it's affecting the heart directly. And these patients often receive a lot of other medications in the hospital that can also affect the heart. So when we give hydroxychloroquine in the hospital to these sick patients with coronavirus, we follow the electrical activity of their heart very carefully, because we know that this drug can cause some electrical abnormalities in the heart, what's called in medical terms a QT prolongation, meaning that it could affect the electrical activity and make the heart not pump effectively and cause a cardiac arrest.
So we think this is rare, but in the trials, we're watching this very closely and actually stopping the drug if it looks like the heart is starting to have some negative effects.
Now let's go to a couple more emails. Guy in Pensacola, Florida emails, I'm no scientist, but it seems to me that hydroxychloroquine could be tested for effectiveness against COVID-19 by surveying the millions of those taking it already as a malaria treatment to find the ratio of those that had come down with the virus. Dr. Self?
Yes, this is an interesting idea and similar to a previous question, which is people who are taking hydroxychloroquine for other reasons, are they prevented from getting coronavirus? So there's a lot of large studies going on now looking at patients who have gotten coronavirus and those who have not, and trying to understand what the differences are to understand the risk factors for coming down with the infection at all and then getting severely ill with the infection. And one of those things is if you're already on hydroxychloroquine, does that prevent you from getting sick? We just don't know yet. There are other medications that we're looking at too across the country, some cardiac medications like ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers. So there's a number of these efforts going on. And unfortunately, like so much in this pandemic, we just don't know yet.
Susan emailed, I'm wondering how and where this medication is usually manufactured. What is it basically made from? And is it difficult to manufacture quickly and efficiently to satisfy the consumer need, especially for those who need it for conditions other than clinical trials? Do you have a response to that, Dr. Self?
I'm not an expert in the manufacturing of drugs, but what I do know is that this is a generic drug. So multiple drug manufacturers across the world can and do make this medication, and supply is being ramped up as we speak. More of it is being produced. So very sympathetic to those who cannot get their chronic medication now, but I'm hopeful that this will be relieved very soon.
Now, many of you called in with a similar question for us.
Hi, my name is Antoinette.
Hi, I'm Ali from Katy, Texas.
I read that President Trump owns a lot of stock in the company that manufactures that drug.
I wanted to note how Trump is really pushing this new drug, and I wanted to know if this is tied to him financially.
Sarah, what answer can you give Ali and Antoinette?
So that is an open question. And while President Trump does have a lot of business holdings and his family in general has a lot of investments that do range across pharmaceutical companies, as Dr. Self was saying, this is already available in generic form. There are a lot of drug makers involved in production of this already, and it's pretty cheap. And so I think the more likely answer here is not necessarily that the president has a direct financial link to this, but that if this were to be the answer, if we do find out that this is the most effective treatment, millions of pills are already ready, and it's very easy to scale up. And we already know that the president really does want to see this wind down. He wants to reopen the economy. He wants this to be cleared up before the election in November. This would be a really appealing answer because it would be a relatively easy one compared to the other treatments out there that would take longer to scale up or that are only made by one manufacturer, and so we don't have millions of pills readily available. The unfortunate part of that, though, is that pills likely won't be the answer to this pandemic. We're going to have a combination of widespread testing and a vaccine in order to really call time on this and change the game.
Dr. Self, I want to read you an email from Phil in Truckee, California. He says, I've heard politicians suggesting that African countries have a lower infection rate because citizens are taking hydroxychloroquine for malaria. I have worked all over Africa, and the only people I have seen taking malaria mitigation drugs are people visiting those countries. Most Africans cannot afford it, and even if they could, would likely not take them long term due to negative health effects.
Yes, that's consistent with my experience as well. A lot of travelers to Africa and other areas that have endemic or long-term malaria will take medications to try to prevent the malaria, but people who live there chronically frequently do not take long-term anti-malaria medications. The pandemic is spreading across the globe, and it hits in certain spots, and there's a lot of cases, and then testing is variable in certain areas. So, you know, I think we can expect the virus to spread and have different hot spots across the world, and our ability to report on how frequent the infection is in certain areas is also dependent on how much testing is available locally. So I think it's, you know, we're seeing different areas that are reporting a lot of cases based on the combination of the virus just naturally spreading and the local testing patterns. So I think that's playing a role.
On that same note, Sarah, you know, tell us, how are other countries using the drug? Is America alone in this focus on hydroxychloroquine?
It certainly is not. It's really stolen attention across the globe. So China was the first to use it. Bayer Pharmaceuticals, a German drug maker that actually was the first drug maker to make chloroquine, the more toxic version of what is now hydroxychloroquine, donated millions of pills to China early on in their epidemic. But since the epidemic is now winding down in China, some of the trials have been canceled because there's low enrollment. So there's still some open answers there that we're waiting for. In Germany and in France, they're trying to encourage people to stay inside of clinical trial use, despite, of course, Didier Raoult, that French scientist, being in France. And that's, again, because of these concerns about health risks and these questions about effectiveness. Only one European country, to my knowledge, Poland, has actually authorized using hydroxychloroquine in combination with other drugs in treating coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting about the way that we use this here, or the way that we've gone about the approach here, is that with the emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration, which is not an approval despite the way that some people have spoken about it, it means that we have now millions of these pills in the national stockpile, but it also sort of gives a green light to doctors to say that, you know, I can prescribe these to my patients. That emergency use authorization did say only use it in hospitals, but what's happening on the ground from multiple doctors I've spoken to is that people will come in, they'll say, I've heard the president talking about this, I've heard this all over the airwaves, you need to give me this medicine to prevent it, or you need to give me this medicine because I have a cough. And it's really hard to say no to your patients in those circumstances. So there's been a lot of pressure on doctors. There's also been a lot of pressure inside the administration to try and make this work. And there's a few health officials that I've spoken to who are frustrated with what they feel is outsized attention being paid to this drug versus what are now at this point dozens of other medicines in the pipeline that could be mm-hmm. potential coronavirus treatments as well.
Now we're nearly out of time, but Dr. Self, tell us, when can we expect a clear answer on whether hydroxychloroquine works for COVID-19 patients or not?
I think there's going to be information shared almost daily for the foreseeable future. The answers that are coming from the very high quality clinical trials, I think, are still weeks to months away. And the timing will depend on how many patients are put in those trials and how effective the drug is at working. So our trial and many others are basically going to be active and running until we have definitive answers. So we project a few months, but we're just going to see how quickly we can get to an answer. And we're working very quickly to try to get to that as soon as we can.
I want to squeeze this in. Meg emails to us, I believe President Trump is just trying to push the medical industry into moving at lightning speed instead of the glacial speed they normally work and give us all some hope. I feel there's very little hope for any solutions coming quickly from the medical community. Your 10-second response, Dr. Self?
I think there needs to be a balance. I think we have to move more quickly than normal because of the crisis that we face, but we also have to be very safe and careful. So I think the answer is in the middle.
Dr. Wesley Self is an emergency physician at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. And Sarah Overmull is a healthcare reporter for Politico. Great to have you both. Thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you.
Before we go, it is time for the act of kindness. We've been asking you to tell us about the moments of kindness and compassion you've seen in your lives. Today's story comes from Brett, a registered nurse in McConnellsville, Ohio.
Last week, I was at a restaurant called the Chatterbox Tavern, and there were some people in front of me, and I placed my order to go, of course, and when I got up to pay, the lady said, oh no, that's taken care of. The gentleman before you paid for your dinner. I was in my scrubs and with the RN tag, and I'm sure it's in relation to the kindness being shown to nurses, and nearly brought me to tears. I just was so grateful and so touched by their act of kindness. McConnellsville is a nice place.
That's fantastic. So good to hear. Thanks so much for sharing your story, Brett. A giant thank you for everything that you're doing right now to keep us all healthy. And of course, please stay safe. If you have an act of kindness to share with us, we would love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. We read and we listen to every single one of them. So again, our number is 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and edited by Matthew Simonson. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.